tell me something good.
We won't be talking about that.
Okay, so that was another one we haven't tried yet, is I. So let's go ahead and go back to the normal. Alright. We've got Kesha here with a 10-year plan to dismantle the music industry piece by piece.
She can't be good at it. No one can.
She says the music industry should be fucking terrified of me. Those of you with deep, dark secrets, you better fucking run.
She's like, Kesha has the look of a girl that just got out of Diddy's baby lotion factory.
Kesha has announced that she's devising a 10-year plan to dismantle the music industry so no one else is wrong the way she was. See what she had to say. In 2005, Kesha, at the age of 18, signed a 6-album contract with Dr. Luke, who's known for being an ass. Over the last decade, Kesha has been at war with Dr. Luke, battling through lawsuits for emotional distress, sexual harassment, and abuse. The two have since settled out of court, and Kesha late last year finally became free of Luke and Kemosabe Records after releasing her 5th album, Gag Order, with the label in May 2023. Late last month, she announced the launch of her own label, Kesha Records. Now, in a new cover feature with Elle, she has revealed that she has a 10-year plan to upend the music industry and protect musicians so no one else is put in the same situation as her. She told the publication, "The music industry should be fucking terrified of me because I'm about to make some major moves and shift this shit. I really want to dismantle it piece by piece and shine light into every corner. I hope my legacy is making sure it never happens to anybody ever again. I do have a sense of feeling protective of young women in music," she added. "I really hope my joy can stand for others to know that it's available to them and to not give up. I enjoy feeling my power, which hasn't been available to me for a really long time, and I'd love to give that gift to others if I can." As for a 10-year plan, Kesha's aiming to work on tackling suspicious and dubious contractual terms that claim rights to songs, like lyrics, and likeness in perpetuity. In perpetuity.
In perpetuity, yeah.
I don't believe in ownership in Pepper and perpetuity of anyone, anything, on any level, in any business. That should not be something a human being can commit to. She added, I'm allergic to control. It gives me a visceral reaction. I feel like people want to own a beautiful thing, and it sucks for them, but you just can't. We live in a time that's more democratic. People can share whatever they want on all these different platforms. I'm excited to see what that means for the future of music, what the future of the world sounds like. Kesha is now working with people in the tech industry to create a digital platform that will safeguard and prioritize artist safety. I don't believe you can create anything if you're not feeling safe. The old guard, they're falling. That is true. The old way of doing everything with secrecy, there's no future there. So like those of you with deep, dark secrets, you better fucking run. Speaking about the album in a chat with NME last year, Kesha said, making this album has allowed me to fall back in love with music, and it's absolutely more vital than it ever has been for me. I'm not talking about selling albums at all. I don't care about that. Just emotionally speaking, it's the place where I get to go and sort my shit out with myself. That's where me and myself go to fight it out. In August, Kesha revealed she has plans to re-record her debut hit single, TikTok, once she obtains the legal rights to do so, to reflect a change in lyrics from Wake Up in the Morning Feeling Like P. Diddy to Wake Up in the Morning.
Yeah, she better change that one quick.
Wake Up in the Morning Like Fuck P. Diddy. At Coachella 2024, Renee Rapp brought out the Kesha during her set for TikTok, making the first time the adjusted lyrics were ever performed. Last month, the rap mogul, we know about that.
Oh, yeah.
We know about that. And his hearing. Wow. It was also reported this week that 120 alleged victims are preparing lawsuits against Diddy for alleged sexual abuse, including 25 minors. Good God, he's fucked.
Oh.
According to Texan lawyer Tony Busby, the majority of the 120 potential cases are expected to be filed sometime this month.
They've got a video of him beating the shit out of his girlfriend in the hotel.
I've seen it.
Oh, Lord, it looks good.
Diddy's next hearing is scheduled to take place on October the 9th. And Harriet are ready to raise some hell. Yeah, I haven't heard that record yet, but I have it. Okay, so, there you go, guys. That's what's going on right now with the music industry. Now, what can I say here? Well, she better hope she's got the right people on her side, because usually that's how you end up with your car blown up.
Yeah,
mysteriously.
Usually people make threats like that.
Yeah, that shit happens. Bad shit happens.
You're not making good judgments. I guarantee you, I ain't gonna let people know I'm sabotaging the shit.
Yeah, especially if they're messing with their money. That's a good way to end up. Boom!
Especially in Hollywood.
Yeah. Which is part of that music industry.
Yep.
Okay, so, I don't care. Let's see, what do we got here? No, we're not going into that one yet. Maybe we are. Yeah, let's go into it. Now this is, let's see how long this is. Longer than all fuck. So what we will do is just, inside the 621 million legal battle for the soul of the internet, major record labels have sued the online library Internet Archive over thousands of old recordings, raising the question, who owns the past? Okay, so there's no way in the living hell I am going to go through all of this.
I mean, we could talk about it.
But I will say one thing, guys. You know, I've worked in the music industry for a long time, and there's one thing I can actually tell you guys. They have the rights to what they have the rights to. Like, if you upload, for instance, I found the entire discography of Insane Clown Posse and Twisted on there, minus a few albums. And they're just all there where you can download them all, okay? So, there is an issue with that, because Psychopathic Records still owns the rights to those songs. So, if you're downloading them from that label, you're effectively pirating. I don't care. I mean, some people don't care, but at the same time,
the people whose money
is in that, they're losing money. And these are smaller labels like Psychopathic, all that. Well, think about the people in Sony, you know, like if you want to, let's do an experiment. Let's look up something that we know we shouldn't be able to find in here. Michael Jackson, Internet Archive. Let's see if we can find all his albums right here on the Internet Archive. Yep, right there. That's every single Michael Jackson. All of them. And you can download them in FLAC right there. That's everything. That is the full discography of Michael Jackson. So, who, alright.
Black Michael and White Michael.
So hold on now. Who owns the rights to...
A lot of different people do.
No, not that. Who owns the rights to Michael Jackson's music? My Jack Music, company owned by the Michael Jackson estate, and Sony Music Publishing. Sony Music Publishing still owns them. Okay, guys, there's something I do want to point out here. Sony Music Publishing is the largest music publisher in the world. However, they are an American-based company. Just because it's Sony Entertainment Group, which I just found out about today. So Sony Group Corporation.
Yeah.
That's your Japanese group. That's your Japan. Okay,
well, you know,
so the whole
PlayStation was they merged together to make a business arrangement.
No, that's not how that worked.
If
basically,
you watch the History Channel version of it, yes.
Well, what I'm saying is Sony Group basically has several different branches under them. So,
well, yeah,
yes, that's what we're talking about. Everything's a subsidiary. All their subsidiaries, like we can look up, we'll go past all this, but. Let's look at... Gotta get to it first. Yep. Oh, damn. Okay, I love how that worked. Alright. So, it should say... Acquisitions, assets, libraries, companies. Anyway, so Sony Music is a subsidiary of Sony Entertainment Group. Or Sony Group Corporation, whatever you want to call them. And they are mainly an American group. Their headquarters is in the United States, and their key person, CEO, and chairman is John Platt. Doesn't sound very Japanese to me. So what I'm saying is, this is American corporations. Don't go after the Japanese. That's not Japan. We want to make that very clear. And we also want to make that clear that, as far as I know... Let me look this up, because I do want to check this out, because Crunchyroll has something to do. Crunchyroll LLC, American Entertainment Company, formerly known as Funimation. Okay, Dallas, Texas, but who owns it right now? Key people, early history, we don't care about that. Sony ownership. Universal Pictures and Sony Pictures Television did not proceed. Okay, hold on.
I think their only competition now is High Dive.
And that won't be around for long either.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. There's already been talk, as of year before last, that High Dive was facing some problems. Okay, so Sony Pictures announced that it would acquire Elation in the anime service. Yeah, so it's Sony Pictures Entertainment. Okay, so is Sony Pictures Entertainment the same people that basically... Oh, yeah, we know about the anti-piracy, but let's see, where is it? All right, so what I'm going to do is just, I'm going to make this easy. Make this pretty easy. Sony Pictures Television. But it's not Sony Pictures TV that bought them. It was Sony... Because Sony Pictures Entertainment. So we're going to go ahead and look that up. Oh, we can do that. Hold on. Search Brave. All right, so... Sony Pictures Entertainment. It's just called Sony Pictures. Okay, so Sony Pictures, of course, Karate Kid, we already know, Spider-Man Universe, all that. Okay, that's fine. So, key people, Tony Vaquera, he's the guy that runs that, and Ravi Ahuja, they're the people that run that. So those are the people in charge of your anime. This man here, Tony Vieira, 1954, American film executive, who's the current chairman. He was previously president and CEO of Fox Network. He was born in New York and grew up with three sisters. CBS, Sony Pictures Entertainment. Yep, they divorced in 2020. Okay, I don't worry about that. But, and we don't know anything about Ravi Ouija. We don't know a fucking thing about this man. It literally doesn't have anything on him. But, yeah, guys, that's who owns your anime. And that is not Japan. That is Culver City, California. And, yeah, West Washington Boulevard, Culver City, California. That's who owns your anime right now. California owns your anime. I mean, that's basically it. They bought the streaming service that hosted Crunchyroll. Oh, yeah. So now California has the rights to all your anime.
Damn it.
That's why California is going through and taking out all these anime piracy sites. There's been some big issues. Now, again, going back to, because this is a multifaceted issue. First of all, guys, you are going to see a mass removal of anime from the Internet Archive. And I mean within the next couple of days. By the time you see this video, they may have already started cleaning house. And I mean, trying to sue them like the record company did. Record companies are already trying to do $621 million. They think that's how much money that's been stolen from them on the Internet Archive.
Especially when they charge $30 to $40 for a half a season.
No, we're talking about the music. This is music.
Oh, that they're
$621 million, I believe, has been stolen from them because of people downloading it from the Internet Archive or listening freely from the Internet Archive. So, again, there is some interesting points here. So, the interesting point I want to raise is, first of all, there is a such thing of as music that is open. Well, we know, of course, Creative Commons license, that's free to distribute. But we also know public domain music, which is free to listen to. There's no problem. Nobody owns the copyrights to Happy Birthday.
Yeah.
So,
nobody's downloading that at a rapid pace, neither.
Well, yeah, it's true. But what we're saying is, if you can get Michael Jackson, everything that Michael Jackson has, and Sony Music Entertainment owns Michael Jackson, then they have a legitimate case because effectively they're losing money that people aren't spending on Michael Jackson streaming on their platform. Now,
it ain't no 621
million.
Honestly, a lot of the people that are downloading it wouldn't have ever bought it.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just like,
I agree. Yeah.
See what this Michael Jackson's all about.
Yeah, yeah, because it's probably a lot of Zoomers that may have never grew up with Michael.
I'm not going to spend $100-something to get every album I ever put on CD, and then, I'm just not a fan. I mean, he did a lot of good stuff. There's also a lot of music that I'm just not as big on as he did.
Oh, yeah. I agree. Let's see. So there were a lot of...
He did Thriller.
Yeah, Thriller.
Well, you ever see that, Dave Chappelle?
Uh-huh.
For Jury Duty?
Yeah.
He like, he said, would you let your kids stay over? Fuck no!
So, I mean, it's rough. And it says, but to many, the Internet Archive always smelled bad. That's the issue with Brewster, says Neil Turkowitz, a former executive vice president international of the RIAA. It's the hubris that flows out of Silicon Valley, and he's got it in spades, that you can make your own laws to determine your norms of conduct if you have a higher ideal. So, he says, Dennis Sprague, director of Glenn Miller Archives and the estate's licensing coordinator, colorfully says he'll refrain from using the word thief to describe the archive's activities because that's a judgmental term. Instead, he settles on a fictional Latin legal descriptor, habeas gravis. In other words, I have it, I grab it. They've really gotten under the skin of a lot of people, and there are movements among right holders to get tough on them. A $621 million lawsuit is tough. And both Turkowitz and Christine Kinney, a music industry lawyer and copyright specialist, think the labels have an open and shut case. They do, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. They do. Because you can't just take...
I will say this. I would feel more sorry for the actual musicians than I do.
The labels,
you know, like, after a certain period of them passing away... that's like music from the 20s. Sometimes a lot of that you can get because the copyrights already ran out on it. But until they like, oh shit, I better re-sign up for the copyright. Now we own Lead Belly. And I like old Lead Belly. But, I mean, we aren't stealing from him.
Right.
You know, we're listening to something that was around, you know, when our grandparents were kids, probably. And so, I don't see nothing wrong with that. On the other end, Sony, you know, they pretty much label stuff and market what they want the price to be, whether it's worth that or not. That's a lot of the times what's causing the pirates, like Deadpool and Wolverine. Mm-hmm. When that comes out, I'm definitely buying a copy. I'm buying a collector's edition.
Yeah. I thought it was coming out this week, but
23rd.
They must have moved it.
Well, they said 23rd. Now, streaming, you're right.
Right.
It's on streaming.
Right.
But, yeah, they'd be 23rd, which is okay. Because I went up to Walmart when you said it was out. I'm like, where the hell?
Yeah.
It would be like our store not to have that shit.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of times I'll go to Walmart and they don't have nothing that's supposed to be out.
I know.
I remember Spider-Man 2 didn't come out till like 2 months after it released.
Yep.
Luckily, I found one in the next town over. Got that. I'd beaten it before anyone in this town ever saw a Spider-Man 2.
I mean, it's... I see exactly what they're doing.
And I would say, too, if you can't get it. Because a lot of stuff, like you said...
Yeah.
You know, those channels where people are playing... dead media, like you can't
dead media
on,
yeah
you can't get it on Blu-ray or anything. I think they shouldn't have the right if they're gonna say it's copyright, they should be putting it out where you can have access to it some way or another.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they don't do that on YouTube. I can pretty much listen to anything that's out there right now and don't have to pay for it.
So there's some interesting stuff. This country owes the recording artists of the mid-20th century not only an apology, but a ton of money. I don't see the Great 78 Project taking any of that money out of the performer's pocket. They're talking about the Great 78 Project, which is absolutely worth reading about. For someone like Mills, these contradictions are deeply personal. These guys worked, he says of the Mills brothers. They fulfilled every job they were asked to do, and they were so good. For me, it's all about getting a return on sweet equity. But Mills also recognizes that those returns have been stymied by forces far greater than the Internet Archive. He's part of an ongoing litigation against Universal, accusing the label of withholding royalties for legacy artists and their estates. We're talking legacy artists, guys.
Yeah.
Universal has denied the claims and settled with some of the plaintiffs. He's also keenly aware that, as black artists, the Mills brothers were not afforded the same financial and investment opportunities as their white counterparts. Remember, this was back in the day, yeah. In the 1930s, Mills says. His dad moved out to Los Angeles to make movies and was unable to buy a house in the affluent all-white Hancock Park neighborhood, even though he probably could have afforded three. I remember when Lou Tucker told me about his father's one big radio hit. I think that paid for our house. And that's interesting stuff. In Cal's office, as our conversation and afternoon drew to a close, I read him something from a book he recommended to me called The Library, A Fragile History. Its prologue states, "Even if libraries are cherished, the contents of these collections require constant curation and often painful decisions about what is continuing value and what must be disposed of." How is the Internet Archive, with its ever-growing collection, contented with this question? Ever the evangelist call replies that technology has made it moot. We've been able to build a library not only of famous people, but little people, he says. That's what's going to be destroyed by these corporations. The history of much more common people. It's obvious they're not doing any harm. Why are they doing this? Call often returns to the question of why, searching for an answer that'll explain the potential destruction of not only a digital trove of 78 RPM recordings, but everything else the archive has preserved. Its very mission, universal access to all knowledge. Without us, people wouldn't have a record, Call says. So why are they trying to erase us? The answer to his why is evident in the actions of those aligned against him. Long frustrated rights holders and corporations who see little difference between the Internet Archive and illegal torrent sites like the Pirate Bay, and haven't spent months lobbying for a copyright system that favors their interests over the public domain for nothing. You would hope that there might be some kind of balancing act, or that everybody could play nice in the sandbox, or come up with solutions that benefit all, Kenny, the lawyer and copyright expert, says, but she then adds with a perceptive laugh, but that's not really how business is done. Yes.
Yeah.
Even if the label, let me just finish. Yeah, if the labels prevail in protecting their products from the Internet Archive, there's no guarantee that the actual creators or their estates will see any benefits. Nothing. The labels don't automatically get $621 million if they win, and how damages shake out is an open question. Sam Trust, a music publishing vet who oversees the Doris Day estate, supports the suit but calls potential damages absolutely absurd, adding, I would be surprised if it's $41,000 worth of damages. So he's with you.
Well, exactly.
And then there's the recent precedent. When the book publisher... We're not going to talk about the recent president. When the book...
you know, the thing with... what? China's giving me money? Okay.
When the book publishers announced their summary judgment settlement with the Internet Archive last year, the Association of American Publishers said only that the confidential damages were enough to cover significant attorney fees and costs. No mention was made of how much money, if any, authors would see. When asked if authors would see any of the settlement following the publisher's victory on appeal, a rep for the AAP simply said the terms of the monetary payment are confidential. Oh, that means they won't be getting shit. Maybe if the labels walk away with a fat check, they'll do more than pay lawyers, pad bonuses, or boost shareholder value. Maybe they'll set up a fund that goes directly to all the legacy artists and estates mentioned in the suit, effectively letting a non-profit pay back the musicians and families those same labels have been accused of exploiting for decades.
How does Internet Archive make money? Advertising?
They don't.
They don't. Well, there you go.
The day calls shows me around the Internet Archive's offices. The existential threat of all the litigation looms heavy, but its enthusiasm remains irrepressible. He's still optimistic about the Internet and the technology behind it, just not the controlling entities leveraging the Internet and the rise of what the monopolies have done to keep people ignorant. At the Internet Archive,
now,
Cal...
Now, did they not have any kind of advertising on Internet Archive?
Not that I know of. I think it's funded. People fund it, I think. At the Internet Archive, Cal and others are still trying to build the future he always envisioned. He excitedly introduces me to a group of people in the basement working on decentralized web projects. A new open internet dream of a web that runs on direct connections between individuals, not moderated through dominant centralized platforms. This place is kind of the soul of the internet, says one team member. In the lobby, in the cheesy afterglow of Concerto Boogie, Call begins to muse. One of the things about 78's that's really wonderful is that this is the first time that people heard themselves. So what they're trying to do is preserve this music that is the very first music that's ever been really
recorded.
Written. Yes. And the labels are like...
There's been music
I know that. But what I'm saying is...
Yankee Doodle was before recording.
Yeah, I know that. There's still plenty of awe in his voice.
But hey, yeah. That was before recording.
And it's... we mean recording. I don't mean written. Woo, I mean recording. Woo.
That was before recording.
And he sticks as he picks from a small stack a postcard flyer for the Great 78 Project, encouraging people to donate discs and join this new endeavor to preserve the past. And then we're off again... He said the Great 78 Project was a community project. It's a very crowdsourced internet-style thing. It's not the Internet Archive. It's hundreds of collectors and institutions all working together. And then we're off again, whisked into another room in this cathedral where a small team is inventing a new way to digitize microfiche. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it is interesting. We can't talk about this whole thing, but obviously there's a lot going on here.
I would say...
And I like what that lawyer said.
What?
$41,000. That seems fair.
Well, I mean, that seems reasonable.
That seems more reasonable.
But, you know, the thing is, the industry itself is killing the ability of people to have hard copies for themselves to watch as many times as they want.
Yeah.
They're making everything on streaming or digital.
Well, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
streaming. Yeah, you can watch it as long as you pay them money to have access to their streaming thing. But other than that, it's all digital. All the music you paid for on your Apple, as long as you have Apple Music, you have that music. Otherwise, you don't have access to it.
Right.
And that's the way all the formats are trying to go, because they can make money out of nothing, basically, except for a recording gets digital, which you could do. You could already see how many we could put of those on a hard drive.
Yeah. All right, so next article, completely different. Most sexually active woman gives update on challenge to sleep with 600 people this year.
I tell you, if they know your body count, not gonna help you.
There she is. Australia's most sexually active woman has shared an update on her bid to sleep with 600 people in 2024.
She's just smiling at you saying, I got herpes.
Annie Knight had a goal in 2023 to sleep with 365 people, and in 2024 she decided to level up and sleep with 600 people throughout the year. Last year, everyone started talking about me because I was talking about my sexual escapades.
Because you're such a whore.
Online, and I mentioned how many people I'd slept with, and it went viral, and everyone was talking about it, she told New Zealand's Edge podcast with Clint, Meg, and Dan. And I thought, why not make a bit of fun out of this and make it a challenge? Knight, who publishes content on an adult subscription platform, because of course she does, revealed
she can't
in the
get a real job.
In
she's
the September 5th interview that she had, she's actually legally considered a prostitute, that she had just over 400 people saying she was trying to use dating apps and meet people organically in real life. But in a bid to hit her goals, she started taking applications from her followers where people can apply to sleep with her. But she was hit with an influx of applications saying she didn't know why she hadn't done that sooner.
Have you ever eaten at Arby's and had a bad roast? It's kind of like that.
The person had to be okay with being filmed, but they had the option to have their face blurred. Had to say if they'd been tested for sexually transmitted diseases, and had to send images of themselves. She said she is really picky, and while sometimes she lowers the bar, there is definitely a certain standard that potential partners have to meet in the looks department. Her goal to hit 600 people in a year means she would need to sleep with 1.6 people a day, but she did reveal there are days when she simply isn't bothered. You can't cut people in half. Some days I might sleep with 5 people, and the next days I might not sleep with anyone. I do get tired. It's exhausting, and I need to have a break, she said. I don't always feel like having sex, and I don't want to force myself to if I'm not in the mood. She revealed that the highest number of people she slept with in one day was 16.
Ugh.
That's almost half the number. Well, no, that's a little more than half the number of combatants in a Royal Rumble.
I'd hate to be number 16.
Right.
Why is it so mushy and creamy in here? What the
Knight,
hell?
Who revealed she is likely to make between $3 million and $4 million this year, said marketing was important as not everyone was going to make it in the industry.
You're a human Twinkie. I see
but
white
it doesn't,
cream spots in all three holes.
But it doesn't always go according to plan. She said the world is her oyster, but she has people shout gross things at her in the street, which
nobody
makes
her
feel uncomfortable. Hey, you whore!
Hey, you oyster shucking whore. How's everything down under? Itchy with a sign of burning?
Yeah. You got some crabs in there!
Oh, bet that bush is more burnt than the Australian wildfire happened a couple of years ago.
Wow. Knight said she wasn't a sex toy and that people need to treat her like a human being.
What would you call someone else?
I mean,
she's known for is sleeping with nobody.
But with everybody.
If she was sleeping with nobody. I misread that. Let me flip it around. Everybody. Every fucking body. It don't matter. Oh, but you got to be cute so I can ruin your life.
That's not the only time the former marketing executive has spoken about the downside of her chosen career with Australia's most sexually active woman, telling, "Last year, people love to tell me to get a real job, even though I'll likely pay $1 million in taxes this financial year." Another favorite comment is, "Your mom and dad must be proud," which is the one I always laugh at, because yes, they are. "My mom messages me daily, telling me how proud she is for living my life authentically and not caring what anyone thinks,
You're
and my dad supports me no
family.
Matter what." But
my grandmother, your grandmother, and my grandmother's grandmother, we're all raving prostitutes with a high body count.
But while the 27-year-old, ooh.
27. 600.
She's getting there.
And now, I'm not saying that's unusual these days for someone that age, but shit. I'm not one to judge people on their sexual partners, how many they've had, but... You know, guy, even if I could have 600 partners within that amount of time, I wouldn't. Because you would get a reputation, especially in an area like we're at, but word spreads. You know, they have a website called The Dirty. It has everyone's dirty laundry aired on it. You can go by city and town.
Damn, I didn't know that.
Oh, it's hilarious. They have pictures. They have all kinds of shit. TheDirty.com. But
okay, but yeah, okay. Since the webpage literally killed. Okay, so let me finish this. Basically, he says, "My mom messages me daily." All right, my dad supports me no matter what. But while the 27-year-old woman, hold on now. While the 27-year-old woman's family are supportive of Knight's raunchy profession, which involves selling explicit images and videos of herself to subs, it hasn't always been smooth sailing. Knight's X-rated career was outed to her dad, Simon, who, until that point, had only known that his daughter worked in social media.
Yep.
"It was pretty awful to receive a panic call from my dad saying, 'A reporter just showed up at my door and said my daughter is a sex maniac,'" she explained.
What father would want to hear that?
Right.
No.
"My heart sank, not because I was ashamed."
You notice she never told him what the thing was that she did. You know why? It's called shame. And now he's gonna, I guess I have no choice. Now shame's gone out the window. Fuck that.
Okay.
Your body saying shame is your body telling you, hey, maybe sleeping with 600 guys ain't the best way of upping your value to other people.
She's continues, "My heart sank, not because I was ashamed, but because my dad is so innocent and kind and he loves me so much, he would have been so confused and shocked by that. I'm not sure exactly what was said to my dad, but the fact that he paraphrased sex maniac makes me think it wasn't anything pleasant. It made me feel like I was being slut-shamed." "You were being slut-shamed, but you're like the one of the biggest sluts in the world.
You're known for being a slut.
You're not the town pump. You're the country pump."
Yeah. You're the oil reserves if you were...
"But thankfully, I had a conversation with Dad and explained what OnlyFans was, and he was okay with it."
You don't understand, Dad. OnlyFans is where you get paid for people to watch you fuck random dudes. "Oh, well, now that you clarified it, I feel completely okay with all this." No, he didn't. If he said he's okay with it, he's lying his ass off. Because I guarantee you, I have nieces. And if I heard, you know, of course they're too young for that now. If I heard wind that they were doing anything of the sort, first, I'd whip the hell out of them. Second, I would find the motherfucker trying to trap them and do some things that can't be said on air or recorded.
Okay, so... Oh, that's pretty sad. Richard Simmons' brother reveals that he was buried. Maybe they just buried him in... Okay, that's fine. That's not sad. They buried him in workout clothes.
"Hey, everybody!" If he jumped out of his grave.
Oh, my God.
You know, from New Orleans.
I didn't know that.
Yep. Has an estate there.
Didn't even know that.
Yep. The gayest man in New Orleans.
Probably.
I'm guessing. I don't think he had it out for the ladies unless he is a chubby chaser. Oh, you work those pits, girls. Work it. You know, Eddie Murphy had a good sketch of him he used to do on Saturday Night Live. You know, he was only on Saturday Night Live for 1 year.
So, I want you to weigh in on this. ADHD is my superpower. Experts agree there are benefits.
There are benefits, and there are side effects.
Okay, so Paris Hilton is saying that her ADHD is her superpower, and experts say there are some surprising benefits. The multi-hyphenate star has opened up numerous times about her diagnosis in interviews and even song lyrics. The most recently told Healthline that having ADHD, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, I was diagnosed with it too, helps her see things from angles that other people might not. ADHD gives me creativity, resilience, and the ability to think outside the box. Okay, yeah, fine. Oh, qualities gross. I consider my greatest strength, she yes. said, crediting the diagnosis for being the driving force behind much of her success.
You know, the bad part about that is explaining it to normal people, what seems so right in your head, they're like, I don't get it. And you're like, you fucking idiot! Oh, do you not understand?
It looks like she's had 480 now this time. 480. Went from 400 to 480. There were 80 within the last.
Moving up the chain, are we, you whore?
She added, ADHD is my superpower, and I do not believe it limits your potential. It unlocks new possibilities. Hilton, 43, said she wants to dispel the myths and misconceptions around ADHD, such as the belief that people who have it are distracted or incapable of focusing, which she says are false.
Sometimes we're hyper-focused.
Yeah. ADHD isn't about being lazy or unmotivated. In fact, we can be incredibly driven and productive when something interests us, she said. Yep. People often don't realize how much effort it takes to manage the constant mental noise and energy that comes with ADHD. It's exhausting at times, but it doesn't mean we're any less capable. In fact, having ADHD can actually be beneficial, according to Healthline. The disorder often causes people to be more energetic, spontaneous, hyper-focused, and creative. They often have endless amounts of energy that they can channel towards success and are the life of the party and more open and willing to try new things. Yeah. Not everything, though.
I am very
open. People with ADHD are also more likely to have a different perspective on life that can make them inventive thinkers, and they can become so hyper-focused on tasks that they have the ability to work at it until completion without breaking concentration. Past research has also shown that when presented with a reward or competition, people with ADHD perform better than those who did not have the disorder. To manage her own to-do list, Hilton said, she break tasks into smaller manageable steps so I don't feel like I'm tackling everything all at once. She also prioritizes her self-care routine and says turning everything into audio helps her focus without feeling overwhelmed. Surrounding myself with a supportive team who understands how I work has also been a huge help, she continued. I truly believe it is just as important for the individual living with ADHD and the people around them to educate themselves. The reason she shares her story about living with ADHD is to end the stigma surrounding the diagnosis, saying she's come to realize how important it is for people to know they're not alone.
Yeah.
Shifting the narrative, not just for myself, but for anyone who's ever felt like the differences were a disadvantage, she said, referring to a song about her disorder on her new album. ADHD is my way of saying it's okay to be different, and in fact, those differences can make you unstoppable.
I tell you, I've had ADHD my whole life, and I've never done a sex video with some guy from the internet.
This is satire, right? The only power this woman has is her last name and her huge inheritance. Otherwise, she'd be an aging blonde working two jobs to support her family somewhere out in the Midwest with no photographer stalking her for a lady's photo. Please, the only people interested in Paris Hilton are your editors and National Enquirer readers. My superpower is sharing her sex tape with friends. Sharing is caring.
Sharing is caring. Honestly, they are right about that. Like, would she have been the same person, or would she have achieved the same thing? You think The Simple Life was about her and Lionel Richie's daughter being airheads going on these misadventures and shit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she wasn't known for it. And honestly, until you read this, I ain't heard about her in at least a year or two.
Yeah.
You know, she's used to be. She used to be big when she was playing an airhead, now.
Okay, so we got another one. Sleep medicine specialist weighs in on how much shut-eye is too much. Sleep is known to have amazing health benefits, but how much is too much? The answer isn't so straightforward. Well, I knew that. Dr. Chris Winter, a Virginia-based neurologist and sleep medicine specialist with a mattress firm, told Fox News Digital. This is, to some degree, an impossible question to answer, he wrote. As with food and other lifestyle factors, Winter explained that the ideal amount of sleep is a dynamic range. What is too much food for me might be an amazingly inadequate amount for an Olympic swimmer, he said as an example. For the average adult, sleep durations exceeding 11 to 12 hours would be considered too much and would start prompting questions about sleep quality and sleep consistency. I do not sleep that long. Now, I know you have to sleep a long time because...
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't.
While getting too little sleep can cause many negative effects. An excess of slumber can pose risks like sleep inertia, which is the feeling of grogginess that occurs after sleeping in for too long. For many individuals, I do too. It's less about too much sleep and more about compensatory sleep, he said. In other words, you got inadequate sleep during the week and are trying to make up for the lost sleep on the weekend. Sleeping too much on a regular basis is more a reflection of inadequate sleep quality overall, Winter said. Even so, the expert remains catching up on sleep if there's been a deficit. I'm doing that tonight. I was an hour early. An hour late, so I have to make that hour up.
That sounds...
Okay, so... Even so, the expert recommends catching up on sleep if there's been a deficit. Studies have shown that if you pay that sleep debt back quickly, it probably keeps the deficit from impacting your health, he said. Oh, yeah. While it should never be plan A, making up lost sleep via napping or sleeping in when possible can be a good fallback plan. Although some studies have suggested negative health outcomes for both inadequate and excessive sleep, Winter emphasized that it's better to get too much sleep than not enough. That's what I've always said. Trying to create consistency in sleep is important, too. Sleeping a different 7 hours every night is not nearly as healthy as sticking to the same 7 night after night. And of course,
an hour later.
I have to get 9. I have to usually get 8.
About 12.
8 to 9 is usually what I have to roll.
Maybe not 12, but I had to hook up by at least 2 something on the machine. Then I usually wake up around 12:30 to 1, depending on when I hooked up.
Okay, so that is interesting there. Let's see, we can... So our last... Or do we have... No. Oh yeah, there's one more thing I want to go through. Elite colleges shocked to discover students don't know how to read books. My jaw dropped. Several university professors expressed concern to The Atlantic about students who come to college unable to read full-length books. Assistant editor Rose Horowitz spoke to several teachers from elite schools like Columbia, Georgetown, and Stanford, who each described the phenomenon of students being overwhelmed by the prospect of reading entire books. Columbia University Humanities professor Nicholas Dames described feeling bewildered when the first-year student told him that she had never been required to read a full book at her public high school. My jaw dropped, Dames said. Some professors do find a few students up to the task, but describe them as now more exceptions rather than the rule, with others shutting down than facing difficult texts. Like me in perpetuity. I mean, I do know how to say it, you run into one, you're like, Daniel Shore, the chair of Georgetown's English department, told me that his students have trouble staying focused even on a sonnet.
You know,
Horowitz wrote.
Definitely ADHD makes it harder to read sometimes because you get stuck. Any daydream. I can be daydreaming and I won't be able to tell you anything I read.
Yeah, I've got that.
Yeah. When in college, when I did a Shakespeare, it was a required course, I would look up the movie for the story, and then I would cross-reference what happened in the actual story, the play, and what was done to be in the movie.
Right. It's not that they don't want to do the reading, she said. It's that they don't know how. Middle and high schools have stopped asking them to. Horowitz reported how a recent EdWeek Research Center survey of about 300 third to eighth grade educators found only 17% said they primarily teach whole texts, with nearly 25% saying whole books themselves are no longer the focus in the curriculum. Wow. While private schools are not immune to this issue, the problem is more prominent with students who attend in public schools where standardized test prep is blamed. Private schools, which produce a disproportionate share of elite college students seem to have been slower to shift away from reading complete volumes, leading to what Dames describes as a disconcerting reading skills gap among incoming freshmen, Horvich wrote. In response, colleges have been reducing their reading load, albeit with some additions for diversity. The Columbia instructors who determined the Lit Home curriculum decided to trim the reading list for the current school year. It had been growing in recent years, even while students struggled with the reading, as new books by non-white authors were added, Horowitz wrote. Oh, I can read it now! I know what he means by, like, they can't even read, like, normal English. If it doesn't say, oh, he, so, basically, he capping on this, that's literally it.
Also, too, with ADHD, it has to interest you, too. Like, there's been books like I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell. Mm-hmm. I read all that real quick.
They made a movie of that.
Yep, but the book's better. It's got more stories in it than, they just took different parts of the book.
Oh, okay.
Mushed it into that. Green Mile. I hadn't read all of it, but I've read certain parts.
So, right.
Green Mile was really good because it has how the inmates got death row. So it tells you the story behind the story.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's always important to get the prequel.
But yeah, it's several books. Of course, the Bible. I've had more interest, but now I can go on YouTube and look up by the book and listen to it, and I retain it better.
Right. I've done audiobooks like that, too. Psychologists told her they suspected the abundance of social media apps like TikTok and YouTube have overtaken recreational reading. Duh! It's changed expectations about what's worthy of attention. Yeah. Daniel Willingham, a psychologist at UVA, said, being bored has become unnatural. Another reason Horowitz suggested was the state of the economy with students more concerned over jobs rather than reading for fun. Some experts I spoke...
breathe, man.
Oh, okay.
Come on, give them a breath.
I was like, damn. Some experts...
Why did you cut me off with all that breathing and shit?
Some experts I spoke with attributed the decline of book reading to a shift in values rather than in skill sets. Students can still read books, they argue. They're just not choosing to. Students today are far more concerned about their job prospects than they were in the past, she wrote. Though professors have willingly begun scaling back their curriculum in favor of shorter texts or excerpts, many still mourn the loss of cultural enrichment that comes from reading. A lot of contemporary ideas of empathy are built on identification and identity politics, UC Berkeley English professor Victoria Kahn said. Reading is more complicated than that, so it enlarges your sympathies. Let's see. Higher education is getting students that are capable of reading, but just not whole books? When I was in school, that was called laziness or bad study habits. The answer is not to reduce the reading requirements, but to flunk the unwilling students. If I were a college professor, I'd be inclined to organize some sort of petition or formal complaint among my peers to present to the Department of Education. It would ask them to force the issue with grammar schools and high schools that are clearly not preparing the children for college or life. We're dumbed down enough. Somebody needs to draw the line and throw our children a lifeline. Let's see. I am 61 years old and I've been reading books since I was 3. Wow, damn. I am so happy that I attended a private school from 7th to graduation. Huh. Let me see.
Well, I've got nieces that are older nieces that love to read. Now, the younger nieces aren't there, but they like the words they've learned to spell.
If public schools aren't going to educate children anymore, I don't see why my tax dollars should support them.
Well, the thing
Amen.
Is, well, Trump's brought this up. There's more money every year going into education, and we're getting less benefit from it.
Yeah. They're getting dumber. It's ridiculous.
They're making the money,
shit.
Whether they do good teaching or not, what would cause them to try to be better?
Yep. Okay, so this
is why charter schools do so well.
Unfortunately, if they cannot read well and read deeply, they will not be able to write well. If they cannot write well, they will not be able to write influentially. Those who can write are and will always be the ones who have lasting influence. Influence is power. The few who set themselves apart as deep readers will hold the most power. It is embarrassing when your organization puts out memos and printed material that appear to have been written by a third grader. I'm a boomer, and in school, technology has destroyed the love of reading. That's not true. I've got to disagree with Miss Crabapple here. I read a lot of shit. You know.
You eat a lot of shit. And some good stuff, too.
Well, no, that's what I mean.
I know what you're saying.
The comics.
Comics are good.
Comics, graphic novels, I mean, we read those. I read regular books. You read
that is ADHD.
Yeah.
Books, if you have some visuals.
Yeah, that's
me. Why I always have the running joke, where are the pictures?
Yeah.
But
I can yeah, imagine I
read
things if I
books
write
without good. Pictures.
If
course.
I read a good book that, you know, I've got
I mean, if
I've
good,
got actual books without pictures here. There's a bunch of them.
Certain writers, the better they can explain stuff
yeah.
through written word, the better, the more I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And there's some people that are so vague. And I mean, I understand part of it is your imagination, but if they're a shitty writer to begin with, my imagination's going to have a hell of a time trying to come up with what they think they were interpreting it to be.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and do this. We're going to take that one out. Like every single woman. Oh, why every single woman wants to date a married man.
Because they've already, that someone already fixed them.
Yep.
Now, I'm not saying men need to be fixed, but I will say this, women I've dated in the past, when you date someone, they get you stuff like, hey, you'd look so hot in this shirt. And you're like, you know what? I think I would look pretty damn good in this shirt. And before you know it, everyone's looking at you like, hey, he's not wearing graphic tees anymore. Something different about you.
Okay, so Billy Corgan thinks Pro Tools made music worse. It brought a lot of people into the music business that really have... Listen, hear him out. That really have no business being in the music business. In a new interview, the Smashing Pumpkins frontman spoke about how Pro Tools and similar tech led to a more stale culture of creativity in music. Now listen to him all the way, because I've read this before.
I'm listening.
Billy Corgan doesn't seem to like it when new tech enters the music industry. Although the 90s icon used AI to create a recent multi-language online advert for his iconic band Smashing Pumpkins, he remains cautious about other tech and music. Tech he believes is problematic. In a new interview with Goldmine magazine, he takes an aim at Pro Tools and Pro Tools type software to express his discontent at how digital audio workstations have affected the music industry at large. In many ways, Pro Tools has made music much worse. It brought a lot of people into the music business that really have no business being in the music business, he said. Pro Tools, as a sort of way of making music on some level, has leveled the playing field that allowed people who can't sing to sound like they can sing. That is a bit of an issue. And people who can't play guitar now sound like they can. Later on in the interview, Corgan extends his point of view. Yes, you can have it fix everything. You can be the worst guitar player and they can make you sound great. And it is really kind of shitty because it basically...
Well, you couldn't do live concerts, probably. Unless it was all video recorded.
Right, and there are some...
Or if
later
they
did
like gorillas, everything's a hologram when they do their shows.
Later on
cool.
in the interview, Corgan extends his point of view on Pro Tools to AI, referencing to how streaming services are to approach the new tech. Okay, so whenever new technology shows up, people are right to raise the alarm, he says. We can already see people using AI to generate lyrics, melodies, and chord changes. We showed you that today. Streaming services are already buying companies to make AI-generated music so they don't have to pay people. They can just take the money themselves, and you can't blame them for that, because of course they're going to do that. But I don't know if you guys noticed, but it sounded really robotic when we played that song. Like, now some of the songs that we play actually do sound pretty good, but sometimes we get a really robotic sound, and I'm like, oh, I don't think people are going to like that. But I have been disproven, because there's millions of people that like some AI-generated music, and I was just checking out this, you guys can look at it yourself, it's from the Circle Pit on social media. And basically, they posted something where they had done like a It's supposed to be a black metal song about a Norwegian bear that drinks beer. Now, it didn't sound anything like that at all. But people were saying, and these are metalheads, so, you know, they're usually very, you know, picky sometimes when it comes to their stuff. They're like, man, this slaps. This sounds great. This is actually really good. Like, what kind of, you know, what kind of genre is this? Like, people were wondering what was, you know... And to be honest, guys, it sounded like anything I've ever made with Suno ever. Like, if I typed in the word hard rock or metal, that's literally what it would give me. And it didn't sound at all like black metal. By the way, I have been able to get black metal to actually fucking work halfway decent because Suno's got some new things where you, like, remove different genres. Like, you type in metal, it'll give you a bunch of shit. But if you say, remove hardcore, remove deathcore, remove core, remove metalcore, remove all that, then it'll just give you a straight up more, okay, well, this is what black metal is. So basically, I'm teaching it, which some of you probably don't like, but oh well. Anyway, how AI is affecting music has been a prominent topic of conversation within the industry of late. Heart on My Sleeve, a song created by the anonymous user Ghostwriter to include AI-generated versions of Drake and The Weeknd's vocals, was nearly eligible for a Grammy nomination.
Huh.
Yeah, an AI song was that fucking powerful. However, the Recording Academy, which oversees the Grammys, clarified the rules on AI, summarizing a work that contains no human authorship is not eligible in any category. Corgan ensures human authorship and creativity are central to the Smashing Pumpkins process even after 30 years of being a band. Their new record was okay. Yeah. Not to get too technical, but we still use amps. There's no amp modeling. It's all raw power. It's guitars and amps in the cabinets and mics. We still
there
believe
are
in moving
synthesizers,
air.
Which I have for my amps.
Sure.
Changes the sound of the guitar. Jimi Hendrix, I got pedal boards that Jimi Hendrix had. I've got pedal boards that White Stripes had. Or has probably still.
Yeah.
You know, all that synthesized, that's basically, but you still have to have the talent behind it to make it sound good.
Corgan has voiced his criticism of Pro Tools in the past. In 2022, he likened Pro Tools to the filter on Instagram.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
the last...
I think some of it's good, some of it's...
The last one we got.
You know, Billy Corgan is an amazing songwriter.
Of course.
You know, he wrote Courtney Love's only good album.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, for Hole. Her first album was written by Billy Corgan. They were dating at the time, I think.
Oh, okay. Tekken Boss once tried to get KFC's Colonel Sanders to join the roster, but the chicken superpower wouldn't budge. They were very open to the... They weren't very open to the idea. Once upon a time, a magical collaboration between a fighting game franchise and a worldwide fast food mascot almost took place until a fried chicken conglomerate got in the way. I'm of course talking about Tekken and its director Katsuhiro Harada's attempt to bring KFC mascot Colonel Sanders on as a guest fighter. So much potential in that pairing, but it wasn't meant to be. In an interview with The Gamer, Harada briefly told the story of reaching out to KFC during development of an unspecified Tekken game. A long time ago, I wanted to have Colonel Sanders from Kentucky Fried Chicken fight, Harada said. So I asked to use Colonel Sanders and go to the head office in Japan. Harada said he traveled to KFC headquarters, received a bad look, and was shot down.
Damn.
In the same The Gamer interview, Tekken 8 game designer Michael Murray expanded on why the fried chicken restaurant, which has a large physical and cultural presence in Japan, might not have been willing to work with them. Colonel Sanders appeared in games after that, so maybe it was just him fighting against someone that was posing a problem for them, Murray said. But it just goes to show you how difficult these types of discussions are.
Instead of turkey for Christmas, they get KFC.
Yeah, I know. One Sanders game Murray was probably referring to is I Love You, Colonel Sanders, the official KFC dating sim advert game the company released for free in 2019. I share Murray's confusion. Fawning over and smooching Colonel Sanders is on the table, but trading blows with Heihachi Mishima is a bridge too far. I hate to give a hat tip to Burger King, objectively the worst burger in fast food, but
didn't
at least...
they have a fight in... Weren't they? It seemed like they were in a fight.
But at least when that franchise decided to spend some marketing dollars turning its mascot into a video game star, the Sneak King didn't screw around. Maybe Harada was dealing with an older, less enlightened chicken regime at the time, but it sounds like the creative director doesn't plan on trying again. KFC's loss. Unfortunate.
Well, I wonder if he'd gotten the go-ahead to do the Waffle House. Wasn't it him that wanted to?
Yeah, he did, and I hope we get that, but I don't know. Awesome. Oh, yeah, I completely forgot. This is one you want to hear about.
All right.
Yep, this is the last one we're doing, and right. It'll be good. All right, so you might have some things to say about this.
Yeah.
All right. Dr. Warren's excessive masturbation is behind the rise of an...
I see what you're going with.
No. Listen, this is. I think you might. You'll understand what he's talking about. I've read this before we started. Dr. Warren's excessive masturbation is behind the rise of an embarrassing male health problem. But how much is too much? Now, we are an adult channel, and I have stressed against gooning and things like that. So basically, let's really talk about what the experts have found here. Men who masturbate too frequently could find themselves becoming flops in the bedroom, a leading GP has warned. Now, we talked about that, and I talked about that with Empress, and I said, well, if that woman doesn't exist for that man, then what is he, you know, what's the problem? If there's nobody for that particular man, like nobody that wants that particular man,
Well, you think about too much dopamine.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, he can just use porn for the rest of his life because there's literally nobody that would be interested in that person. And we're getting that. We're getting to that where there's going to be a lot of people that men don't want any interest in and women don't want any interest in. And when we get to that point, then that's what we have to do. That's the point. That's the point I'm trying to make. There's this idealism.
I think the government's behind a lot of that.
Yes, but there's this idealism that, even if there was a soulmate, because of all the stuff in social media that's going on right now that's turning men away from women and women away from men and all this others, they'll never meet each other, and they'll never meet each other on the same way that we would because they've already got all these messages in their head telling them men are this, men are that, women are this, women are that. So, boom.
I mean, I think those are a majority of it.
It's a majority. And
I don't know. I'm good at finding the individual that's kind of outside the box.
Well, yeah, and then you can find that, but it's going to be harder and harder and harder to find.
Well, it probably is. That's why I'm on the job, always.
Men who masturbate too frequently can find themselves becoming flops in the bedroom, a leading GP has warned. In moderation, self-pleasure helps to reduce stress, improve sleep quality and mood, but it can become an unhealthy habit and trigger a form of ED. Overall, there's no strict rule or guideline on how much people should masturbate, says Dr. Donald Grant, GP, and senior clinical advisor at the independent pharmacy. But when masturbation gets out of hand, there's a variety of ways it can impact sexual and physical health. A key concern is the rise of porn use. Half of adults in the UK now access graphic material online, according to a recent survey by media watchdog Ofcom. And Dr. Grant links this to a rise in porn-induced erectile dysfunction, or PID. So, yeah, you can totally say, oh, shit, I'm PID. Oh, damn. Well, Yeah, sorry, lady, I'm pied.
I'm all pied out.
I'm pied. It's not
gonna
work.
No cream pies for you. Cream pies were used before I got here.
Up to 50% of adult men suffer from some degree of erectile dysfunction, according to the British Association of Urological Surgeons. It is often associated with obesity, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and diabetes, but can have no obvious cause. One lesser-known culprit could be pied, claims Dr. Grant. PID is a type of erectile dysfunction that stems from an unhealthy consumption of pornography. This unhealthy porn usage can lead to desensitization, making it more difficult for men to achieve and maintain an erection as they're used to more intense sexual activities seen on screen. It can lead to reduced interest in sex with actual partners as men prioritize porn and masturbation instead. More worryingly, Dr. Grant warns that compulsive masturbation could trigger physical changes that affect intimacy. Compulsive masturbation can lead to reduced sensitivity in the genital area, making it more difficult to achieve sexual pleasure stimulation. It can occur when nerve endings become damaged from too much activity, creating a loss of sensitivity. This can also impact individuals who masturbate too roughly, causing a potential friction damage. Thankfully, this is a short-term issue, and factors such as taking breaks or utilizing lubricants can help restore sensitivity. And thankfully, there are a range of treatments available to men who are struggling with ED, helping them manage a healthy sex life and achieve erections with ease. Demand for these are also booming. NHS prescriptions for erection-boosting medications have risen to a record level in England, recent official data suggests. A total of 4.57 million prescriptions for Sildenafil, more commonly known by the brand name Viagra and other types of impotency drugs sold under the name Cialis and Levitra, were dished out by the health service in 2023. This is an increase of 130,000 prescriptions compared to the previous year, from 4.44 million to an extra 20,000 compared to 2019's figures. Dr. Grant added that over masturbating can be damaging in other ways. It can cause men and women to become hyper-focused on their own pleasure, meaning when the time comes for sexual intercourse with a partner, individuals could experience performance anxiety, which directly impacts sex drive. The question of how much is too much is subjective, he admitted. Masturbation habits can differ largely from person to person, with some people doing it daily, weekly, or not at all. It's important to monitor the sexual activity to ensure it doesn't interfere with social lives, work, or relationships. Additionally, discomfort or injury is a telltale sign that masturbation sessions are becoming too much and harming health. It is important to maintain a healthy but sensible sex life through masturbation, ensuring it's not the expense of daily activities. Some people can even experience mental distress due to guilt or shame relating to their masturbation. That's bad. This can stem from porn usage or other factors, but can have a big effect on people's mental well-being. Overall, common sense is required to ensure it remains a recreational activity without interfering with other aspects of daily life. If you want to go into the bathroom to masturbate when you're at work, you're probably doing it too much. Yeah. Overall, common sense is required to ensure it remains a recreational activity without interfering with other aspects of daily life. I'm saying it again. Dr. Grant advises those concerned that they are suffering from PIDE to speak openly about the situation with your partner to help alleviate some of the anxiety surrounding the issues. Overall,
one-on-one after work,
well, masturbation,
it's a recreational activity.
Overall, while masturbation comes with a variety of health benefits, I believe it's also important to manage activity to avoid some short and long-term health risks. So there you go. There you go, guys.
I will say...
Talk. Right. It's like, speak!
Yeah, too much of good things, obviously bad, because I'd like, if you could have ice cream or cake or whatever you like, if I could have I don't think too much steak is ever a bad thing. That boosts the hell out of my testosterone. But too much cake, too much ice cream, yeah, that's good every once in a while, but if you do it every day, you're going to be a fat ass, and you ain't going to have any drive because the estrogen will be pumping. What you need is moderation. That's the key to everything. And once you can get that, basically, I will not masturbate unless, you know, of course, if I meet a girl or something. But until the evil builds up in my system to where I can't control myself anymore, mm-hmm. and I can't think straight, then I will get it out of my system and let it reload. And that'll give me a little bit to... All right.
Yeah, I mean, I was told.
And they say that's a good way to go about it.
I was told.
Not over porn.
Yeah. Porn doesn't do anything to
me. Not anymore.
I mean, like I said, it doesn't really matter. Because
Big Jay
for me, there's a difference.
About that.
There's a difference. There's a difference between an actual partner. And, like, I get more intimate. Like, if I'm with a partner, I'm more intimate.
Well, yeah.
And less, like, I'm less about the overall...
I'm a giver.
I'm overall, yeah.
Like, I can masturbate on my own time.
Like, the erection and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, sure. I can take up whatever if I need to, but it doesn't matter.
Well, sex is way better.
Mm-hmm.
To me. I mean...
Not to me. I didn't enjoy it.
Well, you're just not a people person.
I didn't necessarily enjoy it that much. Like I said, I didn't necessarily enjoy it with the woman that I was having sex with. We had.
You find the woman that you do enjoy, it is amazing.
Well, but that's the problem is that you have less choices for that than usually you
do. I got personality. It gets.
Well, yeah. I know that, but I'm saying not you. Saying a lot of men, young men especially, are having more of a challenge
with
that. Well, it's
because they grew up on the internet and not out in the
real
world. Yeah,
I know that, but there's nothing you can do about that.
Young ladies' minds when somebody with a personality comes up, oh, you're like the movies I watch.
Yeah.
Or you're like the things I see on
YouTube. Exactly. Yeah. I get it.
I'm not saying I just do great all the time. There's some hits and misses, but just not even looking, just being charming gets a lot of attention.
Right. I get that. So, I mean, what I'm saying is, yeah, it's, for me, like, it's different. Because I am more apt to talk with a woman before I even think about sleeping with her. Well, like, I want a good cover.
More than that.
What I'm saying is, all right. What I'm saying is, I'm gonna talk with her about her hobbies, all this other shit. I mean, I just want to get to know somebody and talk with them and find out who they are. And then if we're, you know, still willing to do the thing, we do the thing. Yeah. But sometimes you're like, you know what? Yeah, maybe not. Because sometimes a woman's really not just ready. And I mean, if you do just bang her.
At our age, if they're not ready, they're waiting too long.
I mean, I'm talking about when I was younger. Because, you know, sometimes you talk with somebody and you're like, you know, you seemed all right, but after, like, I just, you know, you feel sometimes like you're forcing it a little bit, and you're like, I don't really see you like that anymore. It gets weird, right?
Yeah. It depends on the conversation you're having. Like, you're more like a sister now.
Now,
in Alabama, that might turn you on. But here, we don't flop.
I get that.
For all those Alabama folks.
I get that. But what I'm saying is, you talk to a lot of these guys, they don't talk to women.
Relationship.
Like, and I'm talking about these younger guys. They don't talk to women, and women really don't know what to fucking say these days. I mean,
well, they don't find out about them until after they've slept with them a lot of times.
Yeah, and that's the crazy thing. But you mean so-and-so wasn't? No. You were...
This is why I'm trying to go more biblical. Meet someone, do it through the Christian path. Because I think in the long run, it was created in a good model for a long time.
Right, I get that. Now, what I'm saying, though, is... All right. So, I was overhearing this one young girl we have at work talking. And she says... She's a younger girl. She's not. She had no kid. No.
Walmart talking that shit.
So
they are filthy.
Yeah. But this one, she's. I mean, like I said, we've got some that are a little different. And basically, she's young, no kids, no husband, nothing like that. And she says, "It's like I'm not going to that party because that's a grown folks party." And she already knows.
How old is she now?
She's not old enough to be drinking.
Okay, but she's old enough to be out of high school, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But she's not old enough to be drinking and getting with grown folks. She might be 18 years old, but that's not the drinking age. Yeah, and she's like, that's a grown folks party. I'm not about that. And I said to myself, I'm glad she's got that kind of mentality. Because there's so many guys that will take advantage of a girl like that. Because they know that she's... you know, pretty much virginal in that sense, that there's no kids, there's no nothing else like that. She's just young, may not have that much experience. And yeah, that's what it is.
Always seems skeezy to me. It's like,
Skeezy.
Does she even want you, or would she
it
even
is
want you?
Skeezy.
Or is she just that
These guys... some of them call themselves alpha males or players, whatever. These guys are the ones that go around.
Date rapers.
Well, yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, they know... So basically, they look good, they smell good, they drive nice cars. They're guys that women want to get close to because they embody the things that they know women want. They're these guys that study about women all the time. Well... if that's what they like, then that's what I gotta be. And they practice their game, and they learn everything, and they get this one, and that one, and this one, and that one. And the girl's like, but that was really special, and I thought we had something special. Vroom, he's already to the next
one.
And
you think about it, too. The short term, they have a set script. That means they have no personality of their own. They only have that script they follow.
They've got that script they follow. And you gotta be careful, because those guys... they're in it for one thing, and it messes with a lot of women.
They're like scammers. You won't ever hear from them again afterwards.
Yeah, well, they're what women want. And basically, they do the thing, and it's like, well, I can't wait to spend another. And that's it. You don't that's spend it. Another. You know, oh, that's it. Breakfast. Yeah, that's gone. And that's what we got to talk about
and
here.
And you got to understand, though, too, a lot of that's through media. Mm-hmm. Now, don't get me wrong. Good looks have always been a commodity.
But not what, that big.
Not through media. But personality. But, you know, more women are going towards physical attributes more than long-term attributes, mm-hmm. which kind of goes against biology, to be honest with you. Because usually, you know, that's like in the 50s, you would see a dog ugly bastard with a gorgeous woman, and because the woman had birthing attributes that she looked attractive, wasn't going to have a deformed kid, and then the guy would, of course, be the protector, bring home the money, you know, pay for the house, the car, everything they had. So it always, that model always, now, despite how women feel about that, I mean, those are good times for both parties because the woman liked her role just as much as the guy liked his role.
Right.
Working his ass to death, bringing home, occasionally getting laid, having a family.
Okay, yeah, I get it. I mean, it wasn't necessarily about looks. Looks wasn't the main thing.
Well,
it's,
I mean,
it's a part of it, but it's not
the... When did it change? Now, I occasionally see a dog ugly guy with a hot girl, but usually he's pulling up in some Ferrari or something else. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I get you.
Now, I had talked to, like, yeah, I'd probably have a beer with the dude, but I don't see why any girl would, other than there's the paycheck.
But, yeah. All right, so I think that's all we're going to do for this one. We'll see you guys back here with some more articles. It's hot as shit in here.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, yeah, by the way, so I have to admit something. I recorded 44, maybe 50 minutes of Nino Hikanawa last night and didn't hit the record button.
Oh.
It was fun.
Well,
I enjoyed the game, but damn, that... Shut up. It was... I don't know. It was good. So I'm going to redo the whole damn thing again. Not today, not tonight, but I'm definitely going to do it later on this week, and we'll have Nino Hikanawa, and we'll do a full hour this time of that one, because it actually got really interesting. And the main character got based, because he's literally like, it's like, okay, what do you want me to do with your daughter? As like, have babies, as many babies as you can. And she's like, do you want to have my babies? And he's like, it doesn't matter to me whether or not we have your babies. It's like, he's stoic. He's extremely stoic.
Yeah.
So everything she says, she's like, well, what about me? And it's like...
Well, you think about it this way. Now, I don't know if how far into that you would go, but just being that, I mean, I'm good either way.
Yeah, I'm good
she's
either
like,
way.
Oh, man, he must have some good shit. He just could, you know, he's like, oh, I guess I could, you know. I mean, it's good shit.
Sure.
The indifference... Because most of the simps are like, oh, I'd lick your ass just to go on a date with you or something. And of course, that's going to taste like shit. But in the end, the guy, it's like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, you look okay. Sure, why not? That's going to be the guy ends up with the girl usually. Unless she's a material girl.
Yeah. All right. Well, all right, guys. That's all we're going to do for this time. I'll see you guys next time, and we are out.
All right.
Enjoy the climb.
Later.